This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. He was arguably America's first sports celebrity, and he certainly paved the way for the bad boy athlete. He is Tyrus Raymond Cobb. The Georgia Peach spent 22 seasons with the Detroit Tigers. Besides being a brilliant outfielder and base stealer, Ty Cobb had a rough reputation. Surly, mean, racist, someone who hated women and kids. How much of this rotten reputation is deserved? And what has been blown up and passed along from fan to fan until it's accepted as truth? My next guest did the research, explored Ty Cobb's life, and he came away with a somewhat different look at the Tiger legend. Charles Learson is a former editor at Sports Illustrated, and his new biography is Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty. Welcome to the program, Charles.
Happy to be here, Cindy.
As you started research for this biography, give us an idea of the Ty Cobb you expected to find.
Well, when I started, I was very much in the camp of most people. You know, I really got into this book simply because Ty Cobb was a major figure if you look at his numbers, his stats. But there hadn't been a major biography of him in about 20 years. And I just came in believing all the prepackaged assumptions about him, things I'd heard all my life, that he was a monstrous man and a racist and a misogynist, like you said. But once I got into the research, that started to fall apart and it started to crumble. And one thing I found very early on was that the really bad part of his reputation, the monstrous part, the racism part, all of that didn't begin until after he died in 1961, and it's based on no new evidence.
Huh.
So it's a very curious situation.
That is fascinating. So if you were talking about Ty Cobb in the 1940s and the 1950s, you found that that racist thing was not hanging around him.
Well, racism, you know, it's part of racism being in the culture that no one was really called a racist back then. And it took a lot. You probably had to be in the KKK. So that wasn't said about him. You know, the word racist didn't even really appear in the English language until the Civil Rights Movement. It was one of the little side things that I found, too. There was a word called racialist, which meant you had scientific theories about racial inferiority. But anyway, so he wasn't thought that when he was thought of as a very intense player and a very high-strung guy, and a guy who got in a lot of fights with his fellow players and with other people. Yes, that part of it was true. But he wasn't considered a monstrous man or a horrible human being until after he died. And one hack sports writer wrote a very scurrilous, untrue article that kind of snowballed into an avalanche of lies.
And you actually been taking aim at two previous biographers for fueling what you see as this push for outright lies or at least grave exaggerations. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, Ty Cobb in his day was known as a very exciting player and a very, you know, he filled ballparks wherever he went. So he was, you know, beloved even by the opposite side. You know, people who liked to boo him turned out to see him. So in that sense, he was a very popular figure. But then he kind of went into a period of decline in terms of his reputation in the sense that, you know, the game changed and the big sluggers came on. He played a very different style of baseball in his day. So he kind of went into eclipse. So it became easy to kind of tell lies about him. And then when he died, it became, you know, very easy to tell lies about him.
The previous biographers, there were two in particular that you kind of call out for really fueling these inaccuracies.
That's right, Cindy. There was a guy named Al Stump who started with a magazine article really in 1961, a few months after Cobb died, in which he talked about working with Cobb on one of those as told to baseball biographies. And he claimed he stayed with Cobb every day for months and months, and he saw this drunken, crazy, vile man waving a gun around, and everyone in his family was afraid of him. And that was the beginning of the lies. Cobb wasn't around to defend himself anymore, and as people told and retold that story, they became more and more fascinated with it, and they embroidered upon it. But even Stump didn't have the racist stuff in it. That came in the 80s when another biographer, who actually, I think, inadvertently and just mistakenly did this, he attributed, he described rather as black several men that Cobb had fought with who turned out, if you really look closely at the historical record, who turned out to be white. So those were key fights in Cobb's vast collection of fights, and it gives it a whole new spin. People also assume just because he was born in 1886 in Georgia that he had to be racist. But the fact is he descends from a long line of abolitionists. His great-grandfather was a preacher who preached against slavery and was run out of town for it. His grandfather refused to fight in the Confederate Army because of the slavery issue. His father was a state senator who stood up for his black constituents and broke up lynch mobs in town, and as a result had a very short political career in northern Georgia. So that's the background that Cobb came from. And he actually said nothing about race until 1952. There's no record of him saying anything. When the Sporting News asked him about the integration of the Texas League, and he said, the Negro should be accepted wholeheartedly and not grudgingly into baseball. The Negro has the right to play professional baseball, and who's to say he has not? So, you know, that was Cobb's first statement, actually. So it's quite ironic that he got cast as a racist.
I'm talking with Charles Learson, whose new book, Biography of Ty Cobb, it's titled Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty. Somewhere as I was kind of preparing for our conversation, I turned up a quote that Ty Cobb supposedly wrote just before he died in 1961. You've probably seen this, and here's the quote. In legend, I am a sadistic, slashing, swashbuckling despot who waged war in the guise of sports. Do you think he wrote that, and do you think that's how he saw himself?
No, he didn't write that. He didn't say it. If you've studied it as much as I have in 4 years, that has Al Stump all over it. Stump was a very hack writer, and he was a very sensationalist writer, and he spoke in those terms that almost sound like dialogue from the Tales of the Crypt comic books.
Yes.
and some of the quotes that are circulated constantly about Cobb on the Internet, the most colorful ones in which he describes himself as a warrior and a battler, and those are all made up by Stump. Now, I should say, Stump didn't just create quotes and stories and facts and books. He didn't just do that. He also forged Ty Cobb's autograph and sold it for money. Most of the autographs that are out there on eBay and that you find at baseball shows, most of them are counterfeits created by Al Stump, and he also created fake memorabilia. He'd go to garage sales and get something and carve Cobb's initials on it and then sell it to collectors. He made a lot of money that way. He's since been discredited. The FBI investigated this, and things that wound up in the Baseball Hall of Fame as some of their most treasured objects turn out to be fakes created by Al Stump. So that's the kind of person that Stump was.
And Charles, am I right? Did Cobb actually, when he was very sick and he was toward the end of his life, and when he got wind of what Al Stump had written, he tried to stop it?
That's right. The first project they worked on in collaboration, actually, it was one of those as told to baseball autobiographies. For Cobb, it was very important because he wanted to set the record straight about his life. He knew he was dying. For Stump, it was just another hack assignment. Stump interviewed him a little bit and then made up a lot and created this whole other persona and character that was not consistent with the real Ty Cobb. He also made hilarious and egregious errors in the book. He tried to keep it from Cobb. Cobb finally saw it and then he was writing letters at the end of his life and threatening lawsuits to get its publication stopped. It's called My Life in Baseball, and some people revere it as a great, you know, a tome on the sport of baseball, but it's a book that does not represent Ty Cobb at all, and which Cobb was desperately trying to get stopped at the end of his life.
Charles, what did you discover in all this research and in writing this Ty Cobb biography that really moved you?
What really moved me was what an intelligent guy Cobb was and what a thoughtful person he was. Thoughtful about baseball and even thoughtful about his fellow human beings. Now, he was very high-strung, very complicated man, but he cared a lot about what people thought of him. And that was kind of the moving thing. And he did, you know, fortunately, I guess, he died without knowing what would become of his reputation afterwards, that it would just take off and become this study in mass psychology and people's love of monsters and villains. This fictional character that was created and called Ty Cobb has a great appeal, I know, because as I go around talking about my book, I find a lot of people who are very slow to part with it. They love this story and they embrace it as one of the, you know, a great American folktale. But that's all it is a folktale, because the real man was a complicated human being, but a smart and an intelligent human being, and perhaps the most exciting player in baseball history.
Yeah, it makes me kind of, as you describe him, I wonder, Charles, was he a guy ahead of his time? I mean, we accept complicated bad boys in our professional sports today. Would he have fit in better in 2015, do you think?
I think he would have, and I think, you know, one of the things, there's very little film of him, just a few little seconds of film snippets, so we don't see his style of play. I think we would have really appreciated it. When I say he was one of the most exciting people to ever play baseball, I mean, here was a guy who once stole second, third, and home on three consecutive pitches. He once hit an inside-the-park home run on a tap back to the pitcher's mound and came home and he didn't even slide. I mean, someone once said that Babe Ruth hitting a home run is not as exciting as Ty Cobb getting a walk. Because when Babe Ruth hit that home run, that was exciting, but it was like a pinpoint. It was started and ended in the same instant. When Cobb got on first base, that's when the fun began, as you watched him scratch and claw and trick his way around the bases. So he was a tremendously exciting player, and I think the more film footage we had of him, and if he was closer to our time and we remembered him better, the more we'd appreciate him.
Charles, we all know the Ken Burns baseball documentary. It gets aired periodically and certainly does not cast Ty Cobb in any kind of a flattering light and fuels this generally accepted belief that Cobb was a real four-star jerk, if you will. Do you think what you have found and written about in your book, Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty, do you think it can change that canon about Ty Cobb or at least cause a course adjustment?
Well, you know, Cindy, I didn't set out to set the record straight about Ty Cobb. And as I say, I set out thinking he was a monster. My only allegiance is to the truth. And the picture I paint is of someone who's, you know, not a saint and, you know, a complicated man who got in a lot of fights, who was arrested a lot of times for fighting, but who also hobnobbed with the presidents of the United States during his life. So he was a complicated man, but he wasn't an evil man. And what Ken Burns did was just sloppy history. And it disappoints me because I love so much of Ken Burns' work. But it was sloppy history that has tainted a man and ruined a reputation and actually cost us a great American figure who we now turned into a devil.
Charles Learson's new book is Ty Cobb, A Terrible Beauty. And you want to know this. Charles will be in Detroit very soon to talk about the book and about Ty Cobb. On Saturday, June 13th, Charles will be at the Detroit Historical Museum right there on Woodward from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. And then the next day, Sunday, June 14th, you can meet with him at the Detroit Yacht Club from 1:30 to 4:30. The events are open to the public, so bring your questions. Charles Learson, it was really great to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us on Stateside.
Thank you, Cindy. It was fun.